From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the summer solstice, the 21st day of June. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. More daylight hours today than any other day for those of us who live in the Northern Hemisphere. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Matt Bennett will be here too from Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. And so will Mike Tenora from T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois, to take a look at the forecast as it relates to the heat, maybe, potentially, in the month of July and the impact that might have on the corn market and corn yields. And we'll also, on this day that the House of Representatives is scheduled to discuss the Farm Bill, at least this afternoon, I think, or maybe tomorrow morning, we'll talk about the Farm Bill too. That with Jonathan Kappas, Ag Policy Specialist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. The Closing Market Report, of course, a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
On this Thursday afternoon, we're joined by Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, to take a look at the marketplace. Good afternoon to you, Dan. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Todd.
I'm told that you are up on the farm, a home farm here in the great state of Illinois this week. How are conditions there?
Well, we just got done with a heavy thunderstorm, and I would say since I've been back, I pulled in Saturday, we probably got a total of 3.5 to 4 inches of rain or so in this particular area. And, you know, I don't think it's over with yet. So the crops look phenomenal. I think the corn over the last 4 days has grown a foot. I think it has really taken off. When I pulled in Saturday, you could tell it needed a drink of water because we had that pineapple look to it. Everything was curling. But as soon as the rain started coming, it's all kind of, it's really fluffed out and really enjoying the rain that is getting there this week.
Yeah, so, of course, you're there in Whiteside County, not too far
Mercer
south.
County. Mercer County.
Mercer County. Sorry about that. My fault. But you're still not very far south of the Quad Cities or Rock Island, Moline. Thanks for being with us today. And thank you, too, for I know you're going to be around probably anyway. I don't know when you're headed back to Waco, but for coming with us a week from tomorrow to the Assumption Fest breakfast south of Decatur. And I'm looking forward to having you and Ellen Dearden, Kim Holzapfel with us on that day, along with Kurt Kimmel. So it should be a good open meeting. Everybody can come. There's a breakfast there that runs from 7 to 9 o'clock. And then at 8:30, we'll take the stage and talk about the marketplace. So thanks for doing that, too.
Well, I'm happy to do that. And I got a lot of acquaintances down in that Christian County, Shelby County area. Actually, Christian County is where I started my Farm Bureau career at in Taylorville. So I got a lot of friends down in that area.
Well, good for you to have a good homecoming. I did, you know, of all these years, I did not know that. That's an interesting little fact. So speaking of interesting facts, I have to know, on the soybean side, we dropped another 9 cents today. But that spike low we had earlier in the week, what you make of that technically?
Well, we need to have a little higher close. If we had a little higher close like we did on corn today, it would be a little more encouraging. My guess is, the way I look at that spike low and the emotions that was centered around that seem to have been attributed to Trump's move to maybe find another $200 million worth of products to put tariffs on. So it was kind of like, you know, when he came out with that text about a year ago when he was tweeting back and forth to the North Korean leader. He says, I got a bigger red button than you do. So that's kind of what it felt like to me. It was, oh man, panic city, you know, tariff war is on full blast. And I think that kind of was more of an exhaustion to the bottom of this market. We'll have to see whether or not that low holds. I'm kind of opinion that that low is going to hold, but I would have liked to seen probably a higher finish today like we saw in corn to give me a little more confidence. The corn market, of course, is in a little better fundamentally shape. The balance sheets are tighter. I think traders don't look for corn acres to really grow in next week's report. But I do think they're expecting some growth in the soybean acres. That's going to be a real tricky one. If we don't see any growth in soybean acres, then I think soybeans will have dodged a bullet, and then they would be able to kind of maybe put together a recovery rally from this steep sell-off that we've seen over the last 3 weeks or so.
Yeah, so that's all. We have lots of growing season to go through. Anything in the fundamental side or the technical side that gives you confidence of where we're headed at this point, or are we just waiting weather out and whatever happens out of Washington, D.C.?
Well, I know the tariff situation has probably been talked about the most, but I think the real driving force of the decline is high crop rating levels and very good rain activity across the growing region. Now, if you look at the preset map over the past 7 days or the past 14 days, yes, there are some spots in there that maybe didn't get any rain. But for the most part, that type of rain activity that you see here in mid to late June, I think the trade says the crop has been made. Okay. Now, we'll sit and argue. We can argue about the yield, whether it's 170 or 180, all the way until the cows come home or the combines start rolling sometime in September, October. But I think right now you have to say the corn crop is made. We're just going to argue about whether it's 170 bushel yield or 180 bushel yield or somewhere in between there. That's the same way with the bean crop. When you get this type of rain activity this time of year, and when you look at the crop rating levels, I would assume Monday's crop rating levels are going to hold steady, maybe even improve a little bit. You got to say the bean crop is made. Yes, we'll argue whether or not the yield is 52 bushels or 45 bushels. And like you said, we still have a lot of the growing season to go through. But as we sit here today, that is what the trade is pricing into the market. I think it's pricing in yields up north of last year. And in soybeans case, we're adding acres from the March report. And yield as good or better than last year. And all of a sudden, those tight balance sheets that we were thinking we were going to have a month ago are now beginning to look like they're a lot looser, especially in soybeans case. We're going to go back above the 400 bushel mark, maybe push 500 bushel, depending upon how many acres we picked up. And again, but I know that the I know the crop's not made, but the way the trade looks at it from a seasonal perspective, this time of year when you get these good Corn Belt rains, it's made. It's just a matter of arguing what size of yield we have on it. And next Friday's report is going to be real key, because if it shows that we didn't gain any soybean acres or we didn't gain any corn acres, or if we gained any, it was just marginally gained, that could be a fairly a positive report. And then that would give us reason to kind of put together a recovery rally of this big decline that we've had here over the last 3 weeks.
Well, hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you next Thursday and then see you at Assumption Fest on Friday morning early.
Very well, Todd.
That, of course, is Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. In today's agricultural news, just one story, and this one comes from the United States Department of Agriculture, where an expert says both the U.S. and China would lose if China imposes tariffs on the United States soybeans and if the tariffs stay in effect for very long. USDA's Gary Crawford has more.
If China actually were to slap a 25% tariff on U.S. soybeans, the impact on U.S. soybean producers in terms of export sales over the next few months would likely be
tiny.
But Purdue University professor Wally Tyner told us if the tariffs were imposed and stayed in place for 3 to 5 years, our bean exports to China could fall by 66%, but our total exports would fall only about 37%. Here's how that would work.
Brazil takes a good part of our market in China. They don't have the capacity to take it all, but they take part of it. But then we take part of what Brazil left behind in other countries. So even though our exports to China would fall by 2/3, our exports to the world as a whole, including China, would drop 37%.
Tyner says U.S. soybean production would fall 15%, corn production would climb, prices for both would fall, and so
the U.S. loses about $3 billion a year in economic well-being.
But because China has to import most of its beans, it'll have to pay more for them. Estimated losses there, also $3 billion.
China produces only about 16% of its soybeans and imports all the rest. So the price of all of their soybean imports would go up because of the tariff. And that means that the whole system in China that uses soybeans, the animal feed system that uses the meal, the oils are used throughout the food system and in other uses, cosmetics and the like. And so that would have a very serious adverse impact on the Chinese economy as well as the U.S. economy. And our estimate is that they're about equal.
A loss of about $3 billion. So both sides lose with soybean tariffs.
Exactly. It's a lose-lose.
In Washington, Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Well, earlier in the day, Jonathan Coppas, agricultural policy specialist, dropped down to my office here in Mumford Hall. He's from the U of I to talk about the farm bill. It's scheduled for a vote either this afternoon or tomorrow, though it's not really clear to me just yet when that'll take place. It was supposed to come up, and this is a reconsideration of a bill that failed earlier in the year. After the Goodlatte bill was taken up, that actually has happened and just failed in the U.S. House of Representatives within the last hour. And that should clear the way, though there are two immigration bills, neither of which I believe, when I asked Jonathan Coppas, will actually pass. But the Republicans are working through some of that. Here's the conversation that I had with Jonathan a bit earlier in the day.
By all accounts, the vote counting appears to indicate that neither immigration bill passes at this point in time. And then it appears that they are close to getting the votes they need in the House to pass a farm bill or to pass that. To the technical technical vote is the motion to reconsider the vote that defeated the farm bill about a month ago. And so, if that happens and they reconsider it and they can pass it, then we presume that the House Farm Bill then completes its side and waits for the Senate in conference.
So the Senate bill is essentially what's been in place to this point.
So the Senate Ag Committee reported its bill out, and we talked about this in a Farm Doc article from the other day, that we're seeing the odds of a farm bill getting completed, if not on time, within relatively close time frame to the September 30th deadline. Those odds have improved quite a bit since about a month ago when the House defeated its bill. The Senate reported out a bill that largely continues existing policy with some fixes here and there. So a good example is the agricultural risk coverage, the revenue program. There have been a lot of frustration with the way it calculates yields, and so the Senate bill makes some minor changes to that yield calculation to sort of smooth across some of the county line issues and deal with some of the challenges that came up in implementation. So it's those sort of things you see in the Senate bill that are just changes and improvements.
Here in Illinois, farmers, at least in Piatt County, not very far from us, will remember, of course, that the Arc County payments excluded them 1 year, and everybody else got a fairly large payment, though they had really good yields that year. So that's what
they're... I would caution that it will alter too much. Piatt County's situation was fairly unique, and
yes,
its yields were so high, it offset the lower prices.
Right.
And you're still going to have some of that variation because it is it's working on prices and yields. But the idea from the Senate version, as I understand it, is to help sort of smooth that out a little bit more.
What are the issues the conferees will have to work through?
So looking down the road, presuming the House passes its bill tomorrow, what we see are, you have two stages then left. The Senate has to pass its bill off the Senate floor, and then we have to work everything out in conference. The biggest issues remain the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, used to be called food stamps. The House took just a very controversial direction on this program, that looking to cut the program further, remove people from the food assistance support they were getting, and that is in large measure helped to cause the problems in the House. The Senate does none of that. So that's one big hurdle that in a conference situation, presuming that no changes are made on the Senate floor, you're still going to have a really difficult SNAP program to work out in conference. And the other sort of the polar opposite of this is in the House, you have opened up the House Ag Committee bill opens up the payment eligibility and limitation, the old sort of reform mechanisms. How much can any one farmer receive? Who can receive farm program payments? Those sort of things. The House opens some pretty significant loopholes and major changes that, roughly speaking, would allow passive investors back in to start collecting farm program payments and open up a whole new pathway to sort of this Christmas tree situation where I add a bunch of entities and bring in more payments and more people and stuff like that. So that's pretty controversial. The Senate has not made many changes. It lowered the adjusted gross income requirement, but that's going to be a tough piece to work out. And you can see those two kind of play against each other a little bit. And so that'll be one of the main things we watch for on the Senate floor, whether we see a political dispute over tightening those restrictions. Senator Grassley has been leading the charge on trying to close loopholes and work on things like that. So presumably he'll have an amendment, if not multiple amendments on the floor that could open that debate up. And then I think the other big area that we see of difference between the two bills is in conservation. And once again, the House has taken a direction that is hard to fully understand, particularly from a state like Illinois, where the working lands conservation programs are important. They're important to our nutrient loss reduction strategy. The House eliminates the conservation stewardship program and tries to tuck some of that funding into the environmental quality incentives program. But how that would work sort of beyond our ability to guess at this point. And the Senate does not make any of those kind of changes. In fact, the Senate bill, from an Illinois perspective and a nutrient loss perspective, is actually moving things forward. Quite a focus on soil health, on conservation planning, on nutrient loss reduction, some changes to crop insurance that would help farmers who are looking to be innovative on these sort of practices, adopt cover crops, and avoid getting into trouble with crop insurance. So we see some fairly significant difference or distance between the two versions. That'll have to be worked out in conference as well.
We'll look forward to hearing from you again and letting us know how it all worked out. Thanks much.
We'll be watching closely. Thanks, Todd.
That, of course, is Jonathan Kappas. He is an agricultural policy specialist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Let's check the cash grain market now. We're joined by Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Todd.
And what are conditions like there in Shelby County?
Well, it's raining right now, and we didn't really, we haven't been hurting for moisture at all since last week's deluge of rain. And our crops look phenomenal as far as the corn's concerned. You look at, for instance, my climate maps. I don't have a hole in any of the fields, really. Maybe a small pond from the big flood last week. But for the most part, the corn looks amazing. Some of the beans are starting to look a little puny because of too much rain, I think. But hopefully we'll get the right kind of weather to bring them out of it. I think it could be one of the better-looking crops overall we've had. Probably my best-looking corn crop in my career.
The good news is that big yields really can make up for lower prices. However, prices have dropped substantially. And I made note that the soybean-corn ratio has changed pretty dramatically in the last couple of weeks, too.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I track that soybean-corn ratio basis to the open DS18 all winter. And obviously, it was saying plant more beans. Even whenever the ratio got a little smaller, but it was robust a lot of the time this winter, and that certainly has changed at this point. I think that could be a factor whenever you look at this fall. If this thing stays this way, so some of the acreage coming out of South America could shift a little bit.
Are there opportunities at these levels for producers to, for instance, cover some of the sales they've already made potentially, or would you dare to dabble in such a thing?
I don't think that I'd get cute with the market. A couple of things that come to mind is I wouldn't be making any knee-jerk reactions. Typically, panic selling doesn't work out so hot for most people. Whenever I think about covering bushels, I would certainly do so with a limited risk position, maybe throw 10 cents on the table for corn and 16 to 20 on beans. That's all I do. If you've got some $4 corn sold, some 10, 20 beans, spending a little bit of money to see what kind of upside bounce back we can get isn't a terrible thing. Certainly wouldn't get into a marginal position, though.
Anything else to let us know about before I let you go for the day?
No, I just think that, yes, we have a great crop going, but I don't think it's in the bin by any means yet. And a person needs to probably let the dust settle on this before getting too carried away with additional sales.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Yep, thanks for having me, Todd.
Matt Bennett is with Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds. We're now joined by Mike Tenuri. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us. You know, there's been a lot of rainfall across the bulk of the Corn Belt. However, there are some dry areas. Can you put it all into context for me?
Well, if you look at the state of Missouri, that's pretty much where the dryness has been centered over the last couple of weeks and going back a couple of months. Western Illinois is included in some of that. But for the most part, the state of Illinois and most of the Corn Belt has been seeing fairly wet conditions over the last 30 days. So although Missouri is kind of at the epicenter of a bit of a dryness problem, it's not very representative of the Midwest as a whole.
So tell me about this as we look then into the month of July. What does it mean?
Well, it doesn't tell us a whole lot. The only thing that we know for sure is that June will end up being wetter than normal compared to average. And if you look at some of the wettest Junes on record, and by that we're just basically looking at any June that was even a tenth of an inch wetter than normal since 1960. So we're not talking about super wet years, but any year that just was a little bit wetter than normal, we have 23 observations of that going back to 1960. The fascinating thing is that if you look at U.S. corn yields in those 23 wet Junes, surprisingly, only 10 of them produced an above-trend U.S. corn yield. You would think the number would be much higher than that, but it was only 10. And if you dig even deeper into it, you see that all of those 10 had temperatures that were at or much below normal in July, all 10 times. And in August, those same years were at or below normal for temperatures in August, 9 of 10 times. That tells us that you cannot have a widespread major heat wave last for an appreciable amount of time in either July or August and expect to have an above-trend yield, even when it's wet at this time of the year in June.
You know, about a month and a half ago, you and I had a conversation as it relates to the very cold April and the very warm May and what that meant for the summer months. Can you tell me more about how that all works today?
Well, if you look at temperatures in April, it was the second coldest in 124 years across the Corn Belt, and that was immediately followed by the warmest May on record in 124 years. But if we dig in and look at all the data, we don't see a lot of hints there of what that means for July and August. That those indicators didn't correlate super well to what we might see later. And that's why we're kind of taking a different angle on this right now. The newest piece of information we have is that we know June is going to end up wetter than normal just based on the rainfall we've had over the last few weeks and knowing that another 1 to 3 inches is on the way through Wednesday or Thursday of next week. And that's where the correlations start to stick a little bit better because you can just isolate out your corn yields and see that any prolonged periods of heat in July or August would have an impact on corn yields. And that's because that's more of a direct function of what the crop is going to be affected by. And we can see that even though it's been wet in June, it just doesn't mean that we've escaped a problem here if it turns out to be hot next month.
Hey, Mike, thanks so much. That's Mike Tenuri. He is with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.